Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, everybody? It is Thursday, January the 16th, heading into the second half of Sports Talk. Steve Geller, Charlie Long, bringing until 8 p.m. this evening. Got a good show lined up for the rest of the way. Todd Graffanini, voice of the Pelicans, will be joining us after the first break, recapping the Pels' victory last night, and also the Birds getting a little warm out there in this chilly weather, having won five of their last eight games. 7 o'clock hour, we'll shift things over to some Saints talk. Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter and WWL's digital content producer, will join us. You heard Charlie in the Sports Flash talking about Clint Kubiak having a second interview with Seattle. Seems like a sign that he might be a gone pecan. Also, the Saints to interview Eagles offensive coordinator Kellen Moore this weekend. We'll talk to Jeff Moore about that coming up. But man, oh man, last night, the Pelicans in the Smoothie King Center coming up with a big victory over the Dallas Mavericks. And it was definitely a questionable ending to the game. At least it went in New Orleans' favor. I texted you, Charlie, last night. I was like, wow, a non-favorable call actually went in our favor for once in a game.
I don't know, Steve. It was a block to me. No, of course it was a goaltend, but at the same time...
Yeah, the NBA came out today and made a statement about it.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
I actually haven't even seen that yet. No, it was a goaltend for sure, but seeing, you know, all the Mavericks fans get up in arms, yeah, don't be in a one-point game against the Pelicans without three of their best players, and, you know, then you have a reason to complain. But listen, Steve, the fourth quarter for the Pelicans, another great sign. They went into that fourth quarter trailing by 4 points, and then they get a strong push late in that game. And yes, we've been raving about Trey Murphy basically since the turn of the new year, rightfully so. DeJounte Murray had a fantastic game last night, led the team with 30 points, but also his playmaking and scoring in the fourth quarter. Whenever you see Hawks fans talking, oh, we got, you know, Dyson Daniels in the DeJounte Murray trade. Yeah, the Pels also got DeJounte Murray. This is a dude that broke his hand in the first game of the season, missed some time with that. He's still coming back from it. He talked in the postgame as well, Steve, right, about how it's been one of the toughest years of his career.
Dealing with some family issues, too, in the offseason.
Correct, but he's starting to get hot while the Pelicans are getting better. In that fourth quarter, where the Pelicans were down four, they needed to make a late surge in that game. He scored 13 points in the fourth quarter, dished out a couple of assists as well, and all of a sudden, the Pelicans' offense was able to get them back in that game, and it came down to that final defensive stop by Trey Murphy, which, yes, it was a goaltend, but it was a block on paper, so that's what we'll call it.
Yeah, we'll talk to Graf definitely about that after the first break. His call of the game-winning non-goaltending call was definitely electric.
Oh, it was fun. I used it for the Sports Slash. It's great stuff from Graf. I'm looking forward to talking with him about, you know, the reasons that this team is starting to surge at the right time. People will forget. I mean, it's hard to forget. 5-29 start, but now you've won five of your last eight.
Right, little baby steps, some positives going on here.
No, there's some good stuff going on with the Pels, and Trey Murphy's leading the way. DeJounte Murray's been picking things up as well. Some good things that we can talk about.
You say DeJounte Murray. I'm looking at some of the stats from last night. And DeJounte and Javonte, it's very confusing sometimes.
So Javonte I've been kind of hard on just because he's not Najee Marshall. I mean, Najee Marshall got paid by the Dallas Mavericks.
Right.
And, you know, they felt like the Pelicans went with Javonte to hopefully replace Najee.
He stepped it up last night.
He's definitely stepped it up last night. That three that he hit at the very end of the game was gigantic.
Massive,
I gave the Pelicans
right,
the lead late, and then all of a sudden you're looking at potentially stealing a game on your home court, and that's exactly what they were able to do. And by the way, Steve, you've texted me this, and I agree 100% with you. On that goaltend from Trey Murphy, they just didn't call a foul on Jordan Hawkins.
Ridiculous.
Hawkins got mugged. So all the Mavs fans that are up in arms about it, yeah, there should have been a call when, I think it was PJ Washington, got behind Jordan Hawkins to punch the ball out. That was a foul.
There you go. Good point. Eye for an eye on that play.
No, man. Yeah. So the referee swallowed his whistle on one end. He swallowed it on the other end,
they
too.
Were ready to get out of town.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, looking at the news from the day, we heard about the Pelicans, the Saints looking at offensive coordinator Kellen Moore. That'll be a Saturday interview coming up for the team. And definitely an interesting prospect for them. There hasn't been much word of some of the other candidates out there that the Black and Gold were rumored to be interested in, like a Cliff Kingsbury. Curious to find out any more if they, the Saints have kind of locked in on their main target, or are they still kind of having that wide net they're casting in their head coaching search? Looking at things with the Chicago Bears, seeing that they sent a private jet to fly Mike McCarthy in for an interview there, kind of feels like they're pulling out all stops trying to land the former Dallas Cowboys head coach. So I'm not sure if the Saints will be in play for McCarthy.
Jeff made a great point that McCarthy is viewed higher among league circles than he is by fans. Because Mike and I talked about that too, Steve. Like, sometimes you'll see Saints fans that are kind of sticking their nose up at Mike McCarthy.
I think it's like, the whole Dallas Cowboys connection.
I guess, but I think it's more that maybe he's not, you know, an electric young guy, right? Like, he's not the most high-energy guy in the room necessarily or on the sidelines. He's still a successful head coach in the NFL, Steve. I mean, we've discussed the comparisons between him and Sean Payton. And someone made a joke, is just like, maybe McCarthy needs a new publicist or something, because he's just not being respected in these, you know, by fan bases when his name gets brought up for a head coaching vacancy. Now, some fans are completely fine with McCarthy. We had people text in to us earlier on in the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking text line that they would be very much okay with bringing in Mike McCarthy, and even excited that, you know, in 2 years, he might have the Saints right back in the playoffs type of thing, because that's the type of head coach he is, and that's his experience as a head coach. He's been successful in both Green Bay and Dallas. Yes, in Dallas, he didn't have the playoff success, but he won a Super Bowl in Green Bay, and the head coaching record all time is very solid for Mike McCarthy. So if McCarthy ends up with the Bears, you know, Aaron Glenn ends up with the Jets, that's where you're like, okay, now what happens? Because those feel like the top two guys on the list. Joe Brady's up there as well.
Sure.
He's been a leading candidate at times via sportsbook
betting odds. I haven't heard anything, though, about a scheduled interview with him yet, though.
Yeah, it's also probably because, you know,
they're a little busy.
Maybe he's, yeah, locked into getting Buffalo back to the Super Bowl. Granted, Kellen Moore, who's got an interview scheduled with the Jets, has a divisional matchup this weekend as well, and he's got a few interviews around the block. So
a lot of folks are connecting the dots with Moore saying, you know, the Dallas Cowboys maybe for him.
Yeah, and that would make sense to me as well. Now, Dallas has put their name out there with a couple different guys, and, you know, the Dion reports would be really funny if Jerry decides to bring him in.
Bring it on, please. I'd love to see it.
That would be a circus. So I'm rooting for that. Don't get me wrong.
Exactly.
But we'll see what happens there. I think the scenario where if McCarthy goes to the Bears, right, and then Aaron Glenn goes to the Jets, that's where it becomes really interesting for the Saints job, because right now it feels like those are kind of the two leading candidates via a lot of, you know, circles around it, and also, you know, sportsbook odds is – those are some of the guys that are, you know, their hats are in the ring for the Saints job, and they're, once again, the leading candidates. And if they both sign elsewhere, who's really next up on the plate?
I really, I guess, appreciate the fact that the Jets are trying to do their due diligence and most research you can possibly get for a new head coach. But man, oh man, how many candidates are they bringing in for a look-see?
It's been like 15.
I feel like every day there's a new one.
Maybe it's actually even more than that. It's probably been upwards of 20. It's actually insane. And so the Jets, they still also need a GM.
Right.
And they haven't figured that out either.
You would think that'd be first before the head coach, but what do I know?
Well, yeah, you would imagine. I don't know. The Jets are weird. So they need a GM and a head coach. And now Aaron Rodgers has also come out and basically said, like, you know, my future with the Jets depends on what happens with the head coaching search and GM search. So that's just a little extra spice to it, too.
Yeah, that'll be curious to see where Rodgers ends up playing if he does next season. It appears like he wants to come back for another year. I don't think it was completely awful. A lot of folks are calling him washed, and I definitely don't think washed. That's the case.
I think he's kind of washed.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah, no, their offense wasn't very good this past year. The Jets
podcast, I just think everything with the Jets obviously wasn't good this year.
No, and that's why they've cleaned house, and you have a new head coach and a new GM coming in. So they were, you know, viewed early on in the process as a potential Super Bowl, you know, contender in the AFC, and they fell flat on their face.
We are stepping away for a break. Be right back with more sports talk after this. Coming back, we'll be talking to Todd Gravanini, voice of the Pelicans, getting his take on the Birds, winning 5 of the last 8. And after that interesting victory last night over the Dallas Mavericks, we'll be back with more sports talk. So stay tuned right after this on WWL.
Inbound to Hawk. Boy, we got a break. Hawkins picked up his dribble. And we throw it away. Najee to Dinwiddie. Blocked by Murphy!
Trey Murphy the third!
Get it to Hawkins!
Ball game!
That was the call. Todd Graffinini, the voice of the Pelicans there, joining us now. Pelicans winning 119-116 last night, Graff. And hallelujah, the Pellies have won 5 of the last 8. Some positive news in this new year.
No doubt about it, Steve. Happy New Year to both of you. And, since the calendar turn to 2025, the Pels are playing much better basketball, and it's producing in the win column. And, and even just going back on the 3-game road trip, starting in Philly last Friday, the Pels went 2-1 on that trip and, of course, won last night. They've been really, really entertaining games. I mean, The unfortunate thing, that probably the best game of all of them was the Boston game on Sunday, which unfortunately we, lost by a point, and CJ's shot went in and out. I mean, think about it. That shot goes in, and the Pels are on a 4-game winning streak right now.
Yeah, things have definitely taken a much-needed uptick for this team with all the negativity around it to start the season. One guy who's been on a tear of late, man, Trey Murphy, what more can you say about this guy? Charlie was just saying, not getting enough respect for the most improved player in the NBA this year.
Yeah, I would agree. We're going to beat this dead horse, it appears, but I mean, it's been health. I mean, look, guys, I mean, you think about it, Trey missed the first 10 games of the season. It'd have been nice to have him to start the year as well, but he got hurt in training camp and didn't come back again until 10 games in. So, but he has really, really taken the most of his opportunity in the starting lineup. When Brandon Ingram went out, Trey basically took his spot, and he has really flourished. And we were talking after the game on the post game. That was, in my mind, his most complete game as a Pelican in his 4 years. You think about, he had a second career. What really got lost in the shuffle last night with all the brouhaha after the game with the block was Trey had a second career double-double last night. He had 10 rebounds in the game to go with the 20-plus and the three block shots and the steals and the assists. And he's just putting up his highest numbers as a pro all across the board. I mean, he's got a career high in steals at over 1 a game. He's got a career high in rebounds at 5 per game. So he is scoring, don't get me wrong, but he is doing it all right now. And, of course, the last play of the game really illustrated that. It was a block on paper, and we're going to go with that. So, and look, I did see the 2-minute report, and it was technically a goaltend, but I heard you guys talking earlier. We have been on the other end of those 2-minute reports so many times, it just went in one ear and out the other. That is the NBA's version of saying, sorry, we screwed up, you lose, see you next time.
Well, and technically, too, Hawkins was mugged on that play.
Yeah, P.J. Washington, I think it was,
Graff. No doubt about it. So the block in theory never would have happened.
There you go.
The foul would have been called on Jordan Hawkins. I mean, we've all got PTSD with the Nolan no call. I mean, that's not on that grand of a scale, but there would never have been a no call if there never would have been an overtime in that game if the no call never would have happened. So you take it that way.
No, that's my entire point is that, the goaltend happened, but, the refs swallowed their whistle on one end, they swallowed it on the other. So we'll take it.
We're even Stevens
then,
right?
Yeah, exactly. But staying with Trey Murphy before we move on, Graff, I just want to get your thoughts on his all-around game improving. I know you mentioned the double-double last night with the 10 boards, but, there was one moment last night, and we've talked to different Pels reporters, and they've brought this point up, is that, his shot creation has gotten better. He can create by himself now, but also his dribbling has gotten better. I remember one moment from last night. Najee Marshall, former Pel, one of his buddies, he crossed him up. And, that's just kind of, one of those moments you see from Trey Murphy nowadays where, yes, he can beat you off the dribble. And, I mean, this is a guy that was just kind of strictly a three-point shooter at the start of his career. But now he's kind of butting into an all-around offensive talent. And I wanted to get on a soapbox because I was talking to Steve about this. If you're looking at, the most improved candidates, like it's Cade Cunningham's award to lose this year. Detroit has taken a massive step, from where they were a year ago, where they were, like, tying the record for the longest loser losing skid in the NBA history. But as far as like some of these other names up there, Trey Murphy's not even like listed in some of these books. It's just, what are we really doing here? I know that, you know, the Pelicans have a losing record and that probably goes into it. But as a single performer, the jump that he's made this year all around game, not just his shooting, but also his shot creation, his defense, his rebounding, it's been super impressive. And it really, you know, shows that the Pelicans made the right investment by giving him his offseason contract. He's going to be their wing of the future.
There's no question. He is a core member of this team, and that's a very good thing. And look, I agree with you. He's gotten so much better offensively. I've mentioned what he's done defensively, but just to see him, you know, take guys off the dribble and get to the rim and get to the free throw line, that is something that he really has taken a huge step forward in this year. And oh, by the way, he is a fantastic free throw shooter. You know, ever since his mom got on social media last year, because look, Trey was my favorite stat is 50-40-90. That's 50% field goal shooting, 40% from three, and 90% from the free throw line. It's happened 11 times in the history of the NBA. Trey Murphy did that. He was 50-40-90 his final year at Virginia. There is no doubt in my mind that Trey Murphy will be a 50-40-90 guy at some point in his career. I mean, he's got the hard part down this year. He's 91% from the free throw line. He's made a franchise record 51 in a row right now. But his ability to get to the rim, get foul, get to the line, that's something he never was really comfortable doing because, quite honestly, I don't think he had the frame to do it. But he's put some weight on. He's stronger. And he's not afraid to take on these defenders and get to the rim. And, you know, John DeShazer and I talk about this all the time on the air. When you're that lethal of a free throw shooter and can get to the line consistently like that, that I mean, you're getting free points. I mean, obviously it's a free throw, but you're getting free points if you can shoot the ball that well. When you think about what he did in Chicago the other night, when he set the record for consecutive free throws, which was at the time 42, Ryan Anderson had it, and his final two free throws were his 11th and 12th of the ball game. And the most impressive thing about that game, guys, he did not hit the rim one time in any of those 12 free throws. Wow. They were all swishes. It was just, he was like a machine. And, of course, he had over 30 that night and was just fantastic. But, no, you can't say enough about Trey. Unfortunately, you know, those postseason awards, he hadn't played enough games. He's not going to have he's not going to play 65 games. Gotcha. He's missed too many games to get that award. But that doesn't mean that he shouldn't be involved in it, because he definitely has stepped his game up big time this season.
Todd, one thing as well that I want to bring up, DeJounte Murray. Steve and I were talking about him in the opening segment, too. You know, in the trade with Dyson Daniels, Hawks fans are very excited with Dyson and what he's been able to do on the defensive side of the ball early in his Atlanta career. But what you saw from DeJounte kind of taking over in the fourth quarter last night, when you're trailing entering the fourth, that was a huge issue for the Pelicans last year when they, you know, made the postseason. Whenever they were trailing entering the fourth quarter, they just weren't able to win games. Last night they were trailing entering the fourth quarter. DeJounte Murray said, "Give me the ball," and he scores 13 points in the fourth by himself. Also dishing out a couple of assists as well. Yeah. And it just feels Charlie, like that's why they made that move.
No, he took the game over. And no, that is why they made the move. And look, I got a lot of Atlanta buddies, and we go back, yeah, Dyson Daniels, you know, we fleeced you guys. Like, he got hurt on opening night.
He broke his hand.
Exactly. This is the guy that we had, you know, signed. This is the guy we signed. It took him a little while to get it going. You mentioned the off-the-court stuff. He's been dealing with that, you know, since training camp. But what's the best trade, guys? What's the best trade? The trade that helps both teams. We needed a point guard, and we got one. And look, Dyson's doing very, very well in Atlanta. That's great. But this is the guy that we signed, who we've seen now in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, in the underlying theme of all of this, and the reason why the Pels are playing better, is because they've got their guys. They're healthy for the first time, really, all year. Now, Herb Jones is not, you know, he's going to miss more than likely the rest of the season. And we'll see what happens with Brandon Ingram. He is doing stuff on the court now. But, you know, that game against Chicago, we had Herb Jones and Brandon Ingram on the injured list. That was the first time since opening night that the list has been that low. And it's no coincidence that the Pels are playing their best basketball of the season, because they've got a legitimate starting lineup and a legitimate bench. You know, in November and December, you're playing guys that are not starters. They're bench guys, and that's why they're bench guys, no offense. But you're counting on them to do things that they're not really capable of doing in that type of role. And now those guys that have played a ton of minutes are coming off the bench, and you see how they're flourishing. And don't forget Jose Alvarado, who missed a bunch of games too, but 23 games with the hamstring injury. And Jose is very integral to this team. They had a stat about a week ago that since last year, when Jose is in the lineup or he's available, the Pels are like 20 games over 500. Mm-hmm. And when he is not, the Pels are 15 games under 500. So don't think that guy doesn't mean a whole lot to the team. And by the way, Jose came back from that hamstring injury that first game against Washington, and the Pels have gone 5-3 since. I don't think it's any coincidence.
He was integral to that game against the Bulls, Graf, hitting four threes fourth quarter to really kind of get them going on that 22-6 run late. But Todd, I wanted to get your thoughts on the Utah Jazz back-to-back games tonight and then also Monday. Utah kind of struggling with a 10-29 record of their own. Just kind of your early assessment of them ahead of their game tomorrow night in the Smoothie King Center.
Yeah, it'll be the first time we've seen them. The injury report is out, and they're going to be missing a bunch of guys, specifically Lauri Markkanen, who has just eaten us up over the years. So he's not playing tomorrow. Now, Colin Sexton is available. He is a very talented scorer at the point. So, you know, they're going to be tough. That Utah always plays as tough. It doesn't matter who's in, who's out. And it's one of those baseball series, Charlie. You're playing Friday and Monday.
Right.
So they're going to be here twice. It should be interesting. They got a lot of young guys that they're playing. They got beat by Charlotte last night in Utah before headed here. And Bryce Sensabaugh, one of their rookies, scored 26 points in the ball game. So, look, they're young, but they're not as deep as they would be if they had all of their pieces. Doesn't that sound familiar? So I think it's going to be a very, very interesting couple of games against the Jazz.
Graf, definitely always appreciate your time. Have a great call tomorrow. We'll definitely be tuned in right here on WWL, man. 7 o'clock tip-off.
All right, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Todd.
Appreciate it. Todd Graffinini, voice of the Pelicans there, joining us. We mentioned that Pelly's heating up right now in this cold weather, won 5 of their last 8. And it's so good to have some positive news, because the start of the season was just so dismal, Charlie, and looked hopeless.
You know, I'm more concerned about the Jazz than I probably should be. Like, they're 10-29. They're kind of floundering. Ali Cosell was on with us yesterday talking about how Lauri Markkanen is maybe overpaid for what he's doing. Steve, there's something about the Jazz, and Graf brought it up there. Like, they always seem to have the Pelicans number.
Right.
The stats are kind of interesting. In their histories, the Jazz are 48-28 against the Pelicans.
All time.
48-28. And the Pelicans have had some good teams against some mediocre Jazz teams. The Jazz have had some great teams against some mediocre Pelicans teams. So, but still, 48-28 seems like a pretty seismic advantage for Utah. And that's probably why I'm concerned. It always feels like the Jazz play a good game when the Pelicans match up with them. I don't really get it. I don't understand why. Maybe it's some curse with the name or something.
Good point on that. We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be back right after this. You can chime in 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. We'll take that break and come right back with more Sports Talk, so stay tuned. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller along with Charlie Longbring until 8 p.m. this evening. Right now, I want to take a little pause and do a little remembrance of an, I guess, sporting legend, you could call him, and not just I guess sports, but also entertainment. Bob Uecker, famously, he was a mediocre major league player, right, to say the best, right there. And he started a second career in entertainment that reached way beyond the ballpark. Backup catcher turned Hollywood star, then a legendary radio voice of his hometown Milwaukee Brewers for more than 5 decades. He passed away with a multi-year battle with cancer, was 90 years old. But being a 200 career hitter in Major League Baseball, but it was nicknamed Mr. Mr. Baseball by Tonight Show host Johnny Carson back in the day, won his 100 or so appearances in late night TV and started the popular series of Miller Lite commercials, did an ABC sitcom, a Mr. Belvedere, also a part of the Major League trilogy and film, authored two books, hosted Saturday Night Live after WrestleMania, and famously graced the pages of Sports Illustrated in a Speedo. His first love was baseball, though, and that never changed. But how does a 200-hitter get into Cooperstown? Well, just because of the character that he was and everything that he became as the voice of the Milwaukee Brewers. Wanted to take a little pause here and just remembering Bob Uecker and hear a snippet of some of that Hall of Fame speech he had going into Cooperstown.
I signed a very modest $3,000 bonus with the Braves in Milwaukee, which I'm sure a lot of you know. And my old man didn't have that kind of money to put out. But the Braves took it. I remember sitting around our kitchen table counting all this money, coins out of jars. And I'm telling my dad, let's forget this. I don't want to play. He said, no, you are going to play baseball. We're going to have you make some money and we're going to live real good. My dad had an accent. I want to be real authentic when I'm doing this thing. So I signed. The signing took place at a very popular restaurant in Milwaukee. And I remember driving and my dad's all fired up and nervous. And I said, look, it'll be over in a couple of minutes. Don't be uptight. We pull in the parking lot, pull next to the Braves automobile. And my dad screws up right away. He doesn't have the window rolled up far enough. And our tray falls off and all the food is on the floor. And from there on, it was baseball. Starting with the Braves in Milwaukee, St. Louis, where I won the World's Championship for them in 1964, to the Philadelphia Phillies, and then back to the Braves in Atlanta, where I became Phil Niekro's personal chaser. But during every player's career, there comes a time when you know that your services are no longer required, that you might be moving on, traded, sold, released, whatever it may be. And having been with four clubs, I picked up a few of these tips. I remember Gene Mauk doing things to me at Philadelphia. Oh, I'd be sitting there and he'd say, grab a bat and stop this rally. Send me up there without a bat and tell me to try for a walk. Look down at the third base coach for a sign and have him turn his back on you. But you know what? Things like that never bothered me. I've set records that will never be equaled. 90% I hope are never printed. 200 lifetime batting average in the major leagues, which tied me with another sports great, averaging 200 or better for a 10-year period. Don Carter, one of our top bowlers. In 1967, I set a major league record for pass balls. And I did that without playing every game. There was a game, as a matter of fact, during that year when Phil Niekro's brother and he were pitching against each other in Atlanta. Their parents were sitting right behind home plate. I saw their folks more that day than they did the whole weekend. But with people like Niekro, and this was another thing that I found the easy way out to catch a knuckleball, was to wait until it stopped rolling and then just pick it up. There were a lot of things that aggravated me too. My family is here today. My boys, my girls, my kids used to do things that aggravate me too. I'd take them to a game and they'd want to come home with a different player. I remember one of my friends came to Atlanta to see me once. He came to the door, he says, Bob Uecker live here? He said, yeah, bring him in. But my two boys are just like me. In their championship Little League game, one of them struck out three times, and the other one had an error, allowed the winning run to score. They lost a championship, and I couldn't have been more proud. I remember the people as we walked through the parking lot throwing eggs and rotten stuff at our car. What a beautiful day. You know, everybody remembers their first game in the major leagues. For me, it was in Milwaukee, my hometown, born and raised there. And I can remember walking out on the field, and Bertie Tebbets was our manager at that time. And my family was there, my mother and dad and all my relatives. And as I'm standing on the field, everybody's pointing at me and waving and laughing, and I'm pointing back. And Bertie Tebbets came up and asked me if I was nervous or uptight about the game. And I said, I'm not. I've been waiting 5 years to get here. I'm ready to go. He said, well, we're going to start you today. I didn't want to tell you earlier. I didn't want you to get too fired up. I said, look, I'm ready to go. He said, well, great, you're in there. And, oh, by the way, the rest of us up here wear that supporter on the inside. So that was the first game my folks walked out on, too. But, you know, of all the things that I've done, this has always been number one, baseball. The commercials, the films, the television series. I could never wait for everything to get over to get back to baseball.
R.I.P. to Bob Uecker. Thanks for the laughs, Mr. Baseball. We will sorely be missed and definitely forever be remembered, especially all around sports, as one of the great characters we got to watch and listen to.
I mean, Steve and I are cracking up listening to that here in the studio. It's just, he is such a as you mentioned, a character.
Bunch of one-line zingers.
Yeah, he's just, I don't know, he was one of a kind. And
rare breed for sure, right?
Real quick before we hit the break here, Steve, Mike made a great point. 53 years he was the voice of the Brewers.
What? Right.
53. Can you imagine that?
I think they have a statue for him at the stadium.
But they have to. He was calling their games against the Mets in the wild card round this past year.
Right.
I had no idea he was 90 years old because he sounded so energetic and still full of life. And just, as you mentioned, rest in peace to such a great broadcaster, great entertainer, and just an MLB legend. And as he calls himself, the best 200 hitter, 200 hitting catcher in MLB history.
Thanks for everything, Mr. Baseball. We're going to take a break. Be right back with more sports talk. Stay tuned on WWL right after this. We were talking Pelicans earlier in the show, and Irvin and Hammond wants to chime in as we were talking about the Pels, Zion Williamson, and a whole lot more. Irvin, what you got to say?
Hey guys, I wish Zion would rethink these 360 dunks, given his frailty. If he's got an open look at the rim, a tomahawk or a two-hand slam would be a crowd pleaser. I know he's trying to make the ESPN highlight reel, but for those 5 seconds of highlights with a possible injury, I would just like him on the floor, playing basic basketball. I know he wants to get some highlights in there, but that, given his body's condition, those 360 dunks are just asking for it. I'll give it back to you.
Irvin, definitely appreciate the comments, and I understand where you're coming from. Yeah. It's like, please, be careful. We know you are fragile.
I mean, you remember the 40-point game that he had against the Lakers where he's just like a freight train down the lane, right? And every single time he was running down the lane, you weren't even thinking about it, and then one time he pulls up and he's grabbing his hamstring, and then he's out for the postseason. So, no, I agree. 100% in all honesty. And I think John Morant has come out and made comments about that he's not looking to, have all these crazy highlight reels every single night anymore. Granted, I think he just had one against Victor Wembanyama,
which was crazy, a basket that didn't count.
Yeah, I know. But he's not trying to do that anymore. He wants to kind of prolong his career and, try to avoid those major injuries. And for Zion Williamson, like we mentioned all day yesterday, Irvin, it's just like, this is a guy that's played in three of the team's first 22 home games. He's played in 9 games overall in this, start to the season. We're halfway through the year. He's played in like 25% of the games. So
thankfully, he's off the injury report. Looks to be a go for tomorrow night against Utah.
He better be. But this is my point. Like, anything he can do to stay out on the floor longer and be in front of specifically the home court fans and the Smoothie King Center, I'm all for it. 100%. If it limits, those kind of primetime highlight plays where he's doing a 360 dunk, if instead he just wants to flush it or just lay it in, Irvin, I'm all for it.
I appreciate the show, but definitely would appreciate you playing in more games. So
agreed.
Please stay healthy, Zion. We need to see more of you because, man, oh, man, he is such a difference maker when on the court. We love seeing you play and need more of it. Coming back with more sports talk after the break, Jeff Nowak, St. Sideline Reporter, will join us to break down all things black and gold. Stay tuned after WWL News right after this.